This morning, United States against Soto. Counsel for the appellant, you may proceed.
May it please the court, I'm Captain Brent Goodwin and Colonel Mark Teletochi. We represent the appellant, Private First Class Sergio Soto Jr. In this case, the government proposed the appellant request a bad conduct discharge from the military judge at trial and agreed to approve only that bad conduct discharge in the pretrial agreement. This term appeared only in the quantum portion of the pretrial agreement. This hid from the military judge the real reason that appellant requested the bad conduct discharge and at the same time disincentivized the appellant putting on a sentencing case. This created a sentencing minimum rather than the sentencing cap.
Is it your argument? I understood your argument to be that it violated RCM 705 and public policy. Are you now saying something different, that the procedural wrinkle that it appeared only in the quantum itself presented an independent problem?
No, Your Honor. We stand by the violation of the RCM 705 and public policy, but we thought that it's particularly volatile of both when it appears in the quantum portion, particularly in regards to public policy. And we list four reasons why public policy is violated by this type of setup.
How does one manifest public policy? It can, of course, be manifested by statute, which doesn't seem to be the case here. We recognize, remember the old gambling cases where we talked about public policy being manifested by a bunch of state statutes disapproving the practice? I don't think we've got that here. And 705 is pretty vague. 705 doesn't speak in explicit terms of this practice. So what do we look to for manifestations of public policy?
Well, the 705 is itself a manifestation.
Yes, but 705 doesn't speak of this practice in explicit terms.
No, sir, it does not.
Okay.
We rely on other pieces of this court's precedent and service court's precedent on various topics to include IAC and sentencing, the Article 66 sentencing type cases that we talked about in the brief, and the irretractable stain of a bad conduct discharge. All of those types of cases illuminate this issue. There's certainly nothing on point other than a lie.
Is there anything in the record that would indicate that the appellant entered into this PTA other than voluntarily?
No, Your Honor, there's no indication.
Okay, it appears that the military judge did exactly what he was supposed to. He was very careful about eliciting the proper responses. And when he asked for the BCD, he went through the BCD drill, did he not?
He did go through the bad conduct inquiry, but he did not go over the term that appeared in the quantum with the voluntariness inquiry that would have happened
once the quantum was open.
Correct.
He just went over the BCD. Was he aware when he was sentencing that the appellant's request for the BCD was part of the PTA?
No, he was not.
So was he under the impression when he was sentencing that the appellant affirmatively wished for a BCD?
Yes, Your Honor.
Was there a time when he became aware that the appellant was only requesting a BCD based on the PTA?
Presumably, when he read the quantum, he became aware, but he never mentioned that on the record.
At that point, could he have reconsidered his sentence or not?
I'm not sure, Your Honor. I don't think so, since he announced it. I don't think he could reconsider it at that point.
Is there anything that would preclude a provision like this from being somewhere other than the quantum portion of the PTA? Was it in the quantum portion as a matter of requirement, or could it have been placed somewhere else in the PTA so that the judge could have seen it?
It could have been in the offer portion. However, our position is that in both scenarios, it would be volatile of public policy.
But what language in the RCM 705 are you relying on for your argument that it's violating RCM 705? Let's talk about that
complete
first.
Complete sentencing procedures provision, but we also
and
have the argument.
And precisely how is it doing that? Is it the three things that you list on page 11, or is it someplace else?
Those are the public policy reasons, but as a practical matter, when the accused asks for the bad conduct discharge, in the general sense, the military judge is generally going to give the accused what he asks for, particularly when he doesn't know why the accused is asking for the bad conduct discharge, as in this case.
Really? You think that military judges just give whatever sentence an accused or the government would ask for?
No, Your Honor. They don't just give what they ask for, but as a practical matter, as the service court pointed out in LICAP from their review of many cases, that they said that that's what ordinarily happens. It doesn't happen every time. You could put on a grand sentencing case and overcome it. But
well, and there's nothing in the pretrial agreement or anywhere else that would have precluded from this defendant from doing what the government tries to do all the time, which is beat the deal. He could ask for a PCD and put on a great sentencing case. There's nothing in the pretrial agreement that prohibits him from putting on a sentencing case, is there?
There is no prohibition on the sentencing case, Your Honor.
And there's nothing in the pretrial agreement or otherwise that permits the CCA to ignore its duty to conduct an Article 66 review with respect to whether the findings and sentence are correct, basically are correct.
Yes, Your Honor. The problem is we don't have a record, just as in Boone, Durant, and Lacey. We don't have a complete enough record for the CCAs to look at to see if the sentence is appropriate or is going to be uniform with the other service.
Well, why are you saying that? What are you basing that on?
When the agreement sets up a scenario where it disincentivizes defense putting on a case.
Well, that's a fancy word, but there's nothing that prevented him from putting on a sentencing case.
There's no prevention. That's why we didn't allege IAC. However, when you look at the scenario where the only thing at issue is a bad conduct discharge and the accused is required by the government to ask for that bad conduct discharge, and generally, he's going to receive that back.
Well, don't you think that the fact that the pretrial agreement in the alternative says that if he's not awarded a pretrial, if he's not awarded a BCD, that he's going to be administratively separated? Don't you think that contemplates that he might not get the BCD that he's requesting?
That contemplates is yes, Your Honor. However, it's still reduces the role of the military judge when you don't have a sentencing case being put on, and the defense counsel has to be careful when they do put on the case not to violate the agreement.
The agreement requires him to request a BCD.
But if the yes, Your Honor,
it doesn't require that he get a BCD.
That is correct, Your Honor. But when the defense counsel starts down that road and say the defense counsel were to have the accused then asked to stay in the service after a request, that could violate the agreement by its terms, and then we would be left without the PTA. So the defense counsel must be careful when putting on sentencing cases. So it's not only disincentivizes putting it on, as we talked about in the beginning, it also creates a situation where the defense counsel must be careful not to violate the terms of the pretrial.
Doesn't every PTA do that? Doesn't every PTA of its own force limit the discretion of defense counsel in sentencing case?
Yes, Your Honor.
That's inherent in the animal, isn't it?
It is, and that's what the question is, where do we draw the line?
Counsel, how does a PTA limit the discretion of a defense counsel in any case? On sentencing?
Well, in a case like Edwards that this court recently held, there was a limitation in the PTA regarding what it could be said in an unsworn statement.
I understand that, but in terms of a general proposition, does a PTA, by the nature of a PTA itself, limit the discretion of a defense counsel as to what can be presented or argued in a case if it's not otherwise specifically limited within its terms?
No, Your Honor, not in a general sense, but in the specific, there is generally limitations on the sentence.
And isn't it the case that, which I mentioned before, beat the deal, if there's a quantum portion that has a five-month cap on confinement, right, you've agreed to a five-month cap on, I'm not saying this particular one, You're not going to suggest, are you, that defense counsel isn't going to put on a sentencing case and hope to go below the 5 months, and that the government, is, even though they know that the most the guy can get is 5 months, is going to put on a sentencing case and try and get as much punishment as he can?
That's correct.
From the military judge.
But in this case, the Bakonic discharge is significantly different punishment as requiring the inquiry, as this court's outlined in McNeely, and other cases. It's a severe punishment, so it's different than, say, the cases where you're talking about confinement. So it's a different type of punishment in and of itself.
The fact that it's a different type of punishment doesn't change the principle that I'm talking about, which is that there's nothing in the pretrial agreement that keeps the defense counsel or the government from putting on a sentencing case and trying to get whatever else they can.
As a practical matter, this arrangement does do that, Your Honor.
Well, counsel, Judge Ryan, did you have a further follow-up?
No.
Okay. If a defense counsel wishes to argue that a bad conduct discharge or punitive discharge should not be applied, what sort of evidence can the counsel put on in that case?
They could put on witnesses from the unit or family members or the accused himself or herself.
To testify as to what?
The wish to stay in the military, on the performance of previous duties in the military. Those sort of items would gain traction, I think, in that area.
In this case, did the pretrial agreement preclude the defense from putting on evidence that the accused wished to stay in the military or that the accused deserved to stay in the military?
Not on its face, no, Your Honor.
Was the defense counsel precluded from arguing that the accused should stay in the military?
I would say yes, Your Honor. I mean, that's where the request for the Bakonic discharge came in the trial, was during the argument of the defense.
In your view, the defense counsel was precluded from arguing that the accused deserved to stay in the military. Now, is that by virtue of the pretrial agreement? Was that by virtue of his ethical responsibilities to his client at that point? Where did the information come from?
Seems to have come from the pretrial agreement, the government's proposal that he would make that request. That's what's in the record, Your Honor.
Did the appellant in this case request a Bakonic discharge during his unsworn statement?
No, Your Honor, just the defense counsel during the closing argument. That's where the request came. An important point that if the court were to rule in the government's favor here and allow this type of agreement to allow it to stand, it will open the floodgates for prosecutors throughout the military to this will become the new norm. So we
is your problem with the clause or with the fact that the judge was not aware of its predicate?
Both, Your Honor. I mean, the LICAP court.
What's wrong with the clause if the judge can explore whether it's voluntary and knowing?
Well, the system, there's systematic problems with arranging this sort of setup. It reduces the amount of sentencing evidence, reduces the role of the military judge, which this court has talked about many times, and their importance in the sentencing process and pretrial agreements. And by lessening the amount of sentencing evidence that comes on, it lessens the ability of the CCAs to look at sentence appropriateness and sentence uniformity.
But every word in there was lessen rather than eliminate.
Correct, Your Honor, but as on the
whole. That's what PTAs do. They lessen things, don't they?
They do, Your Honor.
What about, what principle of law is implicated on the other prong of that question? If the judge is not aware of it, what principle of law is implicated, if any?
Well, the role of the military judge under Article 45, and then this court's precedent, Allen, Mitchell, and Green, where this court's talked about the role of the military judge in coming up with a fair sentence. If he doesn't know why the accused is asking for that sentence, particularly when the government's proposing it, it certainly reduces that role. And when you reduce all these checks in the system of military justice, you create a case that where you have empty ritual trials like the court was concerned about in Cummings and Hollins and the like. So that's the problem. While it may not eliminate all these roles, but when you lessen each, you're going to end up with a practice that creates that empty ritual that we do not.
So you're basically making a slippery slope argument. If we open the door to this here, then it's going to become the norm, and then we're going to have to wrestle with this.
Absolutely, Your Honor. It is a slippery slope argument, but it goes beyond that. Even without the slippery slope, this practice shouldn't be condoned, even if you don't believe that it will create a slippery slope. I mean, the LICAP court, because of its logic, was sound in that decision, while not binding on this court. I think the logic was sound. The public policy concerns are certainly evident. And we ask that the court grant relief in the brief. Pending any questions, I see my time has expired.
You have a further opportunity on rebuttal. Thank you, counsel. Counsel for the government.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Captain Chris Whitler, and I, along with Major Chris Burgess, represent the government in this matter. The provision at issue is actually in the interest of public policy, not in violation, because it effectuated the party's intentions while also complying with RCM 705 Charlie 1 Bravo.
But it doesn't comply with RCM 910F 3. I mean, all that other stuff aside, you'd agree that that the provision that he asked for, A, B, C, D, and or agree to an administrative discharge, that's not a sentence limitation, is it? That's not a limitation on the sentence.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. Can you repeat the question, please?
Well, I'm asking you, is him requesting a bad conduct discharge or agreeing to a separation if he doesn't get a bad conduct discharge, is that a limitation on the sentence he can receive?
No, Your Honor.
So then why was it in the quantum portion of the pretrial agreement?
Your Honor, it was placed in the quantum portion of the pretrial agreement. I can't speculate as to why it was.
Well, RCM 910F basically says if a plea agreement exists, the military judge shall require disclosure of the entire agreement before the plea is accepted, provided that in trial before military judge alone, the military judge ordinarily shall not examine any sentence limitation contained in the agreement. But everything else he's supposed to examine. So why wasn't this in the portion that he could have examined and gone through before sentencing?
Your Honor, again, I can't speculate why it wasn't in that portion, but what I can tell you is that the military judge did do a detailed inquiry at three different stages in the court-martial. And basically, in accordance with this court's guidance in Edwards, that in and of itself
was the military judge aware that the request for the BCD was a product of the PTA and not a pure wish upon that the appellant had?
As appellant's counsel said, Your Honor, the military judge was not aware of that until he read the quantum.
How is he supposed to assess the voluntariness and the equity of any PTA if he doesn't know what's in it?
Your Honor, as I was just beginning to answer Judge Ryan, there were three different times within the proceeding.
The judge did exactly what he was supposed to, given the fact that he didn't know. And in fact, wasn't there a colloquy where they said, yes, there's more in here, Your Honor, than just this. Well, I've got to know what is it. Well, it's the Chapter 10 provision.
Yes, Your Honor.
But lurking in there was not just the Chapter 10, but this thing. And they, even when this colloquy took place, trial counsel didn't find it necessary to acquaint the judge with, nobody found it necessary to acquaint the judge with this thing's being lurking in there. How can the judge, he can try to ensure voluntariness, but if he doesn't know this thing's in there, how can he do his job?
Well, first, Your Honor, during the inquiry itself, he spoke about, I believe it was paragraph 3 in the offer portion, which discussed the quantum, made the accused at the time read the quantum, verify that that is what he intended to do, verify that that's what memorialized his agreement with the convening authority.
But this goes back to my initial point, which is this is not a quantum limitation. I mean, this is not a limitation on the sentence at all. It's a requirement that he request a sentence. And so leaving aside the appellant's arguments about saying that it violates some 705 and public policy, I think that you have to agree that it didn't belong in the quantum portion of the pretrial agreement and that it should have been in the first part of the pretrial agreement. And now what we have to grapple with is that irrespective of whatever the military judge did tell appellant, he wasn't able to inquire before he conducted sentencing into whether or not the accused, you know, had voluntarily agreed to this particular term of the pretrial agreement.
There are a couple things I'd like to address with your question, Your Honor. The first is that in this case, the fact that the military judge did not see it until he read the quantum arguably makes it a more fair sentencing proceeding, makes it a more open proceeding in that he did not have a preordained idea that this was part of the deal. That's the first point I'd like to make. The second is through RCM Hotel 910 Hotel 3, there is the option, or not the option, there is the instruction that was exercised by the military judge, which is, after he reads the quantum, if there is a term in that agreement that was not addressed previously in the proceeding, he at that time will assess whether the accused understands that provision. If the accused doesn't understand it or doesn't agree with it, there are two options. One is with the consent of the government, the military judge can then cater or tailor that term to comply with the accused understandings. Or the other option is that the military judge can allow the accused to withdraw at that time. So there were mechanisms by which if this ever came up on the record that this was something that appellant did not want, that the proceeding could have stopped at that point, the term could have been stricken and it could have gone forward.
Did the military judge avail himself of those mechanisms?
No, Your Honor, because
did the military judge ask the accused at that point about this provision in the PTA?
Just so I'm tracking with you, Your Honor.
After it comes open, after he sees the full extent of the PTA, does the military judge ask the appellant and go through with the accused the voluntary nature and his understanding of this particular clause in the PTA?
Your Honor, yes. There was a point at which he opened it up, read the quantum, reiterated what the quantum said, which was basically, you know, in exchange for...
So where in the record does it indicate that he then asked him whether he voluntarily understood that he was requesting a BCD, blah, 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 not whether he understood the sentence limitation?
Yes, Your Honor. That was not done after the quantum was read. That was done at sentencing after the BCD was requested by his counsel.
But that was... He did not know at that time, did he? That the reason
that
he was requesting the bad conduct discharge was because his pretrial agreement required it.
Correct, Your Honor.
And I guess I'm having trouble following your argument that the sentencing procedure is somehow more fair if the military judge doesn't know why he's requesting a bad conduct discharge.
In appellant's brief, one of their arguments is that this notion that because of a bad conduct discharge term that we have here, that the bad conduct discharge is somehow preordained. Our argument is simply the fact that the judge was not aware of this term until he read the quantum.
Well, there's nothing in the pretrial agreement that requires a military judge to give him a bad conduct discharge. Granted, I mean that's absolutely granted. But you don't think that it's reasonable to assume that if the military judge was 50-50, 50% I'm going to give him a BCD, 50% I'm not going to give him a BCD, and then he asked for a BCD, where do you think that tips the balance?
That is reasonable to assume, Your Honor, that if a BCD was requested, it might tip the balance in favor of him giving a BCD. But as you had mentioned previously, that doesn't guarantee that it's done. That doesn't limit the appellant's options on sentencing to argue against it. The term itself is simply to offer to request a bad conduct discharge. It's not, it doesn't limit any of his other rights under the agreement to present witnesses.
And I'm not suggesting it does. I'm just questioning the government's argument that it's somehow more fair to the accused to have it, that have the information hidden from the military judge. That's my only question, is make that argument. I don't think you can.
What we're saying, I'm sorry if I'm confusing you with what I'm saying, is that...
I'm a simple person, so be careful.
Yes, Your Honor. What we're saying is that, to go back to appellant's argument, the fact that a BCD is requested and is in front of a military judge, that would somehow make it preordained. What the government is saying is that the fact that it was not that way in front of the judge, that the judge did not know it was part of the deal, left him more leeway to evaluate the merits of the actual request on its face, and he wasn't burdened by understanding that it was part of the deal itself. That you were talking about the 50-50, you know, in that type of scenario, that's one thing that is in the favor of, you know, a sentencing proceeding that is open rather than one that, as the appellant is alleging, is an empty ritual where everything prior to even going into the sentencing proceeding is decided beforehand.
You don't think that the military judge would feel like he had more leeway if he knew that the only reason that the appellant requested a bad conduct discharge was because it said that he would in the pretrial agreement? And then the military judge could say to himself, well, he said that he would and he did, but I'm not going to give it to him. I choose not to give it to him. I mean, do you see that the appellant's argument that it somehow preordains the result can be wrong, and that you can still be wrong, saying that it's better for the accused?
Yes, Your Honor, and the government can't speculate into what that particular military judge might have put as far as factors for and against. What we've got before us, though, is just going back to the fact that this term itself does not limit appellant's right for a full sentencing proceeding.
Well, will you agree that under RCM 910 that it should have been in the part of the pretrial agreement that the military judge went through line by line before the sentencing proceeding itself?
Your Honor, the government would put forward that the checks that were done during court martial.
That isn't my question. My question is, will the government agree that this provision, which is not a limitation on sentence, should have been in the first part of the pretrial agreement that the military judge went through with the accused, line by line, before sentencing? And if not, what language in RCM 910 are you relying on that allows it to be anywhere else? Because your other point is it doesn't matter that it should have been in the first portion. That's not my question.
Your Honor, I'm looking at RCM 910 Foxtrot 4 Bravo, which says the military judge shall inquire to ensure that the parties agree to the terms of the agreement. The government is putting forward that was done by the military judge going through paragraph by paragraph the agreement. Now, with regard to this term, because it was in the quorum, the actual terminology used in it was not reviewed. What was done, however, was the military judge had appellant read the quantum, which was alluded to in paragraph 3 of the offer, and go through and make sure that that's what he wanted to do.
But this is not a quantum limitation. I mean, that's the point. It's not a quantum limitation. It's a condition placed on the accused. It doesn't limit the quantum portion of the sentence at all. Does it?
No, Your Honor.
Counsel, I want to go back to your earlier statement that this provision somehow is in furtherance of public policy. Now, generally in PTAs, it is a negotiating, it's a bargaining agreement, and the government wants to get a guilty plea, and the accused wants to get some kind of a limitation on his possible sentence. Here, And that process has worked very well. But here it seems that the government's raising the ante. I mean, the government has all the cards in these negotiations. The government can say, we're not going to enter into a pretrial agreement, or it can say, we're only going to enter into a pretrial agreement if you agree to these caps on the sentence. And now it's saying, and we also want you to plead guilty to a bad conduct discharge. Now, there certainly has been some discussion as to whether or not that would result in the new default position for the government. But if the government is so insistent in having that provision in this agreement, and if we say that's just fine, why wouldn't they want them in all the agreements?
Your Honor, in this situation, I can't speculate as to if it would be in every agreement or what would happen.
Well, why wouldn't it be in every agreement?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Why wouldn't it be in every agreement? If we say that, yes, that's a legitimate part of the of a pretrial agreement, the government can come in and demand, say, we're not going to enter into a pretrial agreement unless you agree to plead or to ask for a BCD. And we say that's just fine, that's not against public policy. Don't you think that, that SJAs across the services will look at that and say, well, I'm going to ask for that?
I think it's going to be factually dependent, Your Honor. In this case, it appears from the record that appellant wanted to avoid confinement. That's why the BCD was on the table. So I would argue...
Well, no, but how does that drive the government's decision to ask for that provision? We're not talking about what the accused is asking for. We're talking about what the government is making a condition to their entering into the agreement.
Our position would be that the appellant would not have to accept that provision if that was...
But, and then the appellant goes to trial and risks both the BCD and greater punishment. And so that, you know, the appellant is a lose-lose-lose here, and the government is a win-win-win, and that gets into public policy. Where do we draw that balance? And now you're saying that we're going to push it over a little bit. We're going to make this a little more favorable, quite frankly, to the government. And do you think that is that's in furtherance of public policy?
Your Honor, I think the furtherance of public policy is exactly what's in 705, which is we've got these provisions, these enumerated terms that have been put forth as not as being against public policy to be in a pretrial agreement, where I think it was in the analysis of 705, otherwise permitting the accused substantial latitude to negotiate terms. What the government is simply saying is it would be a case-by-case basis. This individual it appears sought to avoid confinement. Therefore, the BCD was on the table. We saw all the checks that were done during the proceeding where the accused confirmed that the BCD is what he wanted. We can infer
confinement. When you keep saying the BCD is what he wanted, the BCD is what he wanted because the government insisted that it be in the agreement.
Your Honor,
it was the government's proposal. It wasn't his proposal.
Right, Your Honor. And under 705, either party can propose a term.
What do you think the public's perception of the military justice system would be if they were to understand that, yes, a person can plead guilty, but in order to do so, they have to request a bad conduct discharge where that's an authorized sentence?
Well, in this case, Your Honor, I think the public's perception would be that justice was done. This individual sought to avoid confinement. The mechanism by which he did that was to agree to offer a bad conduct discharge. The government conserved resources and the accused the accused avoided confinement. Therefore, justice was done.
And you see no impact on future cases if we were to say that this was not in violation of public policy?
Your Honor, there will be an impact on future cases. What we're saying is that at this juncture, this does not offend 705, does not offend public policy. What we're saying is it should be left as is because it allows the parties the opportunity to negotiate the terms.
What if you had a situation where the negotiation was over confinement? Leave the BCD out of it. And the government came in and said, to get this deal, whatever the deal is, we want you to request a substantial minimum of confinement. You know, leaving aside whatever figure it is, aren't you then getting into a position where one's liberty is basically a contractual item to be bargained away? And doesn't that sort of offend public policy, like the 13th Amendment, for instance?
In that scenario, that may be the case, Your
Honor. Well, I mean, if we open the door to this, what's to keep us from sliding down the slippery slope that the appellant says we're going to slide down?
Well, Your Honor, I think we need to keep in mind that what we're opening the door to here is predicated on a specific scenario, a factual scenario, mm-hmm. where, as I've said, probably ad nauseum, that the accused sought to avoid confinement. Therefore, this deal was effectuated. So, I mean, I think that would be the confined set of circumstances.
Counsel, what was the maximum in this case?
The maximum in this case at the special court martial was a year, forfeiture, two-thirds payment for a year in the BCD.
And so if the parties had entered into an agreement in which the cap would be 10 months confinement of BCD and forfeitures of two-thirds pay and reduction to E1, could the government insist as part of the deal that the accused request that in his sentencing proceeding?
I think because you're adding those additional terms to it, the essence of the negotiation, the freedom to negotiate terms, could be argued to be taken away from that individual.
Okay, thank you. Now, in this case, it's the government's position that the accused was free to put on any sentencing proceeding that he wanted. Is that the government's position?
Yes, Your Honor.
If the defense counsel had put on a case in which he brought in the company commander, the battalion commander, the first sergeant, and they all said that this is a great soldier, he needs to be returned into service, and we need him. And that's the case that the defense counsel put on. How could the military judge accept the plea as voluntary at that point if the accused is saying, I want out of service, and his counsel is saying, here's all the witness why he shouldn't get out of service?
Can you repeat that last part, sir?
How could the military judge accept the plea as voluntary if the accused is saying, I want out of service with a BCD, and his counsel is presenting evidence totally to the contrary? How could the military judge accept the plea as voluntary under those circumstances when faced with that kind of presentation?
I would have to draw the court's attention to the actual words in the quantum, which is merely that the appellant had to offer to request a bad conduct discharge, that he was not required to want one or somehow prove that he actually desired one. So you've got an offer.
So he presents to the court that I wanted a bad conduct discharge, and then he presents evidence that I don't want a bad conduct discharge. How can that be a voluntary plea?
Well, Your Honor, I would imagine, again, can't speculate, but I would imagine that in that set of circumstances, to avoid interfering with the providency of the plea, he would put on evidence as to what a great soldier he was, that he had stayed out of trouble beforehand, that he would avoid talking about the issue of wanting to stay in service, that it would be more, I guess, alluded to instead of directly contradicted to make it improper.
Because it sounds a minute ago like you were suggesting that he commit a fraud on the court.
I'm not suggesting that.
Counsel, real quick question. Can you tell me anywhere in the record, is there anything in the record that suggests or that tells us that the appellant did not desire a BCD?
No, Your Honor. There was nothing. The sentencing was comprised of his unsworn statement where all we really have to go on is that he had mentioned that he had wanted to get to be with his wife or a husband to his wife and a father to his kids.
And there's no post-trial submissions to the convening authority or otherwise that are in the record that say otherwise?
No, Your Honor. There were basically multiple opportunities for the accused to bring up this concept of a violation of public policy or that he was he suffered prejudice and it wasn't done at any stage, whether it be withdrawing from the deal, which was authorized. Defense counsel could have brought up any misunderstanding in open court. the 11.05.
Was it raised in clemency or before the CCA?
No, Your Honor. It wasn't included in the 11.05s, and it wasn't attached to the record trial.
If there are no further questions, you have an opportunity to conclude.
Thank you, Your Honor. Appellant's proposed remedy in their brief is unjust. Setting aside the bad conduct discharge but leaving the remainder of the agreement yields no punishment. The findings and sentence should be upheld by this court because the crimes warrant the bad conduct discharge and appellant has sought to avoid confinement. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Does the defense have rebuttal?
To answer your question, Judge Ryan, in the 1105s, the appellant did request that a post-trial Chapter 10 be issued in his case, so it's indicative that maybe he didn't want the bad conduct discharge.
If you win the case, goes back to status quo ante, true or false?
Can you repeat the question?
If you win the case and the PTA is busted, status quo ante, you were to do it all over again, right?
I believe the agreement remains intact minus the prohibited term.
This wouldn't be a material term from the government standpoint?
No, we don't believe it would be a material term.
You could go through and pick out the provisions you liked and the government then doesn't end up with the provisions it liked.
Well, we would disagree with that assessment, Your Honor, but we would say that the balance of the agreement, the appellant's cooperation with CID and the local law enforcement, which the government received in this agreement, and then the offer to plead guilty would pleading guilty to the charges.
You appreciate that this court might not agree with that, that you run the risk that this court might say you win on that too, or the whole thing is busted.
We appreciate that, Your Honor.
Counsel, what's your position as to whether the government could get the same place via a different route? In other words, if the quantum portion said words to the effect that limitation on confinement to no confinement if a bad conduct discharge is awarded, you'd agree that that's a lawful pretrial agreement term, right?
Yes, Your Honor. I believe there's precedent from this court that has held down. I don't know the case name.
So basically tying any limitation on confinement to the military judge awarding bad conduct discharge.
Yes, that seems fair, Your Honor.
But in that case, don't you think that to use the opposite of disincentivized, don't you think that the accused would be incentivized to request a bad conduct discharge?
Yes, Your Honor, and there was, a service court case that talked about a similar situation where the trial counsel sort of argued the opposite or argued against a certain term of confinement in order that that scenario wouldn't happen. So there was public policy concerns in the reverse under certain circumstances. I'd have to look in my notes on that case name. But there are concerns that put in those kind of terms, the government could then have to argue against a certain punishment in order to be able to get the terms of the agreement that they wish. And if you give me a moment, I can give you a chance.
No, that's fine. It's okay.
Sorry, Ryan.
It's okay. You've answered my question.
Okay, Ryan. Pending any other questions, concludes our vote.
Thank you, counsel. We thank both counsel for your presentation today. The case is now submitted, and the court will be in recess until 10:20 a.m.
Court stands in recess until 10:20 a.m.